Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you. And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, where we try to expose all the dark, dusty corners of real estate that, frankly, you didn't know existed, realtors didn't know existed, and HGTV is not interested in talking about. So today, I'm going to bring you a whole entirely different dark, dusty corner of the business and bring you one of our really, really bright strategic minds, Clint. I can't even say it, even though you reminded me. Scott Kahn, did I say it right?
Yeah, it's close enough. It's, you know, anything that resembles my name is okay with me.
We'll just call him Clint. And by the way, of course, as usual, all the information will be in the show notes for the episode. So I usually tell you all that at the end, but I'll just tell you now because I should know how to say a name, but my brain's not working today. So Clint, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell our listeners a little bit about you, your background, how you came to be around real estate, and anything they need to know to understand your perspective.
Well, I'm a recovering CEO for an association. I did that for about 10 years, and I'm now doing what most do when they can't. They consult, and so I'm doing that. But previous to that, I'd spent about 10 years in talk radio, so I have a history in media and the background there. So I've had a lot of experience there, and I'm trying to kind of combine the two worlds, the association work that I'd done, where I'd kind of mastered some various strategic planning type of approaches, and some of my media skills that I honed over 10 years. And so doing this national consulting and speaking gig, something that you can relate to.
So for the average realtor listening to this, because they enjoy stories about realtors having sex and porn and stuff like that, tell them why they should be the least bit interested in association life. Give me something juicy, Clint. I need something juicy from association world to help people know why they should listen, and then we'll talk.
Well, I guess I could speak from the fact that if they're not paying attention, that there are some folks that get awful full of themselves and make decisions not only, you know, from a perspective of how does it benefit them, but it's one of those things where sometimes they get into, you know, they take advantage of personal relationships to forward that, thinking that the association world is just that important, when in reality, the importance is making sure that they represent those folks that are out there, like you, doing the everyday work to make sure the industry is working.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because truly this morning I had a call with a woman who is an incoming president for a local association. So if you're a realtor listening to this and you've not totally paid attention to association life, you got to know that in realtor world, we have your local association, which is where you live, your state association, which hopefully you understand what that is. And then we have the national association, which actually is an international organization. So there's all these different levels. And the lady I talked to this morning is coming in as president of her local association. And the reason she wanted to have a call with me was to ask me for some leadership tips on how she could have a successful year. So, and one of my questions, because first of all, how much do we love people who ask outsiders, how can I do a job better? That's like my favorite kind of human on the planet. Wouldn't you agree,
yeah,
Clint?
I mean, oh, absolutely. I think it, you know, ultimately just starts with a perspective on being a representative or servitude. I mean, being in that leadership role is not about you. It's about the overall organization itself. And, you know, I think there are lots of people who get caught up in the trappings of personal legacy and what they're going to do and how important their year is and what their, the you know, whatever their mantra or motto or whatever is going to be for the year. And they lose track of the fact that you're there to be a representative voice for, you know, in some cases, thousands of members who either don't take the time to show the interest or don't have the time to do their term of serving right now. So to me, it just, you know, it becomes one of those things of understanding the role and having good processes and ultimately good leadership as a whole, not just as a single person.
Right. Because leadership by yourself is not leadership. That's loneliness and pitiful kinghood. Nobody wants that. But so one of the questions I asked her after she's figuring out how she can have the best year for the association, I said, so tell me about the CEO / association executive in charge of your local. I said, is this a really good, awesome person? Is this a medium worker? Or is this somebody whose time is up? Because that's going to tell me, obviously, you know, what kind of advice she might need from me. And she's such a typical realtor in that she's a lover of people, which also makes her passive aggressive. And she said, I think she's bad to medium. I'm like, okay, so if you're going to be a realtor, because realtors are the rainbows and sunshine people of the world, as we know, in general, they just look for the best in people. If she's dealing with somebody that's bad to medium, that means this person probably skews more toward the not helpful side of the staff world. And so I asked her why she ranked her primary staff executive as bad to medium. And apparently she's dealing with somebody who does not communicate well, value the members, doesn't show a lot of gratitude, and doesn't really seem to have a lot of heart for change for the future. So that's an entirely different situation to lead in. And frankly, the lady I talked to is not alone in dealing with a staff executive whose vision of the future is not exactly future leaning. So you have served in that role. What would you tell an incoming leader who's dealing with a staff person who's not exactly energetic or shoulder to shoulder with her volunteer leaders?
I think it starts with asking the question, why are they there? You know, are they just riding it out? You know, honestly, you know, the stats for the realtor side, you know, it's what I guess it dropped the last year. So it's in, you know, lower 50s now, but used to be the higher 50s in female for the average realtor. Well, the average association executive is even more experienced, let's put it that way, than the average realtor. And so a lot of it is what's their motivation? Are they just riding that train out, you know, because they've had this job for 15 or 20 years, it's comfortable. They can kind of get by just with status quo. There's no need to improve or look at potential change. If that's the case, I mean, you've got to really start to assess how can you manage that and redirect it, or do you need to make the decision to move away from that type of an executive? You know, it happens a lot around the country. It's not something that's isolated.
If you are an association executive that's been in a role for so long that you've lost your heart for it, I think there's two possible roads to go down. The one is, as you said, it may be time for a change of personnel, but sometimes I think it's a change of perspective. So many of our volunteer leaders, as you've already alluded to, come in with this mindset of my year, and they're looking at the association from the standpoint of their legacy, their 1 year in leadership, but the staff has to look at it as the continuity that benefits all the members over time. So with these different perspectives, sometimes I would suggest we may have some association staff that are underutilized because they're dealing with such a wide range of personalities and mindsets while they manage a membership volunteer-driven organization. So maybe we should, as volunteer leaders, ask our staff what they need and what their successes have been so that we can help them build. Because I don't know that it's a one-way street, which it sometimes is portrayed as in the volunteer side, that it's almost always the staff's problem. Well, I think sometimes it's the volunteer's problem.
Yeah, you get that. I mean, you come in and you have volunteers that are used to running their own business, and you know, y'all kind of end up owning your own business and running it your way, regardless of your, you know, association with a larger entity or not. And so you come in thinking that that's how business is run. And in this case, an association is very, very different. It's a collective experience. Sometimes you have to coach your way through it. You know, in terms of, you know, getting to know each other, how you're communicating, because that communication piece is definitely a two-way street, where if you don't have it right, it's so much easier to point the finger and say, oh, well, they're getting it wrong, instead of assessing whether you're doing it right. And, you know, there's no real formal training in a lot of instances for coming in and being in a leadership role in the association, other than, well, I've been on the board for 8 years, or I was on this committee or that committee. And a lot of times that's actually an orientation that's not helpful, because you're so focused on one thing. When you rise to the leadership level, you have to have an eye for everything. And like you say, you have to be working in a team type of environment and trying to enable everyone to be as successful as possible.
So considering that, and I think this whole piece of how the association is a different beast than the realtor business and that beast, do you think, it's a two-part question, do you think we provide the correct kind of education for our volunteer leaders to enable them to understand what they've said yes to and help them guide and partner with staff for the future in a role that's entirely different than their day-to-day life? And then the second half of that being, do you think the fact that realtors are responding to threats in a really visceral, personal way in their personal business, so by threats, I mean the external venture capital companies or just the changing mindset of the consumer, because they have to move so fast in their business life, and the associations on the whole have not been really quick movers on responding to changes in the profession. Do you think that the associations have failed to respond because we don't educate our volunteer leaders correctly? Does that two-part, very big, giant question make any sense to you?
Yeah, for me, the good organizations are doing it right, and they're actually, you know, training their folks. But you know, there's a real difference in terms of those who are doing it right versus those I think that are just finding their way through. And so those I think that are geared and oriented towards flexibility and change and are trained to understand that that's the way the organization functions, they can be. But I think that there are a lot of entities out there that aren't getting it right, and those entities, when they end up in a status quo mode, are going to suffer dramatically in a change-based world, especially one where the outside entities are able to change on a dime and with, you know, precision versus trying to make a group decision through an association.
So how should we be equipping our volunteer leaders to push associations into a mindset that embraces change instead of the status quo mindset, as you mentioned, that absolutely resists change? What do we need to do in specific that will change that? Because you're right, we have some organizations that they are killer stellar examples, but we got a whole bunch that just close their eyes and ears and figure it's always going to work itself out.
Well, for me, Lee, it always comes back down to the organization's culture, and whether that's, you know, in the association or in your own businesses, it comes back to the association's culture. And for me, those are primarily made up of five different aspects. One, you have to have a strategic focus. You need to have repeatable processes, which is really important in the association world because of the changeover of leadership. So if you don't have processes that can be repeated, it's really difficult to establish long-term culture. Ultimately, what you want from those processes are to get consistent outcomes, hopefully high-performing, consistent outcomes. And then you want to start to develop a sense of mutual passion. That's a singularity, not that you're not going to be passionate about a lot of different things, but when you as an entity act, it's with a single passion, not with a bunch of personal agendas attached to that. And then finally, the thing that happens over time is that you actually start to identify yourself as a entity because of all those previous four steps. So for me, it's really addressing organizational culture that starts with good staff. And that means working through your leadership to develop these types of systems so that you can do this on an ongoing basis. If it's not systemic, then it's just one year at a time. And that's not an effective way to manage this world.
Okay, so that leads me to what bothers me most about the way our leadership behaves sometimes in association world, which is, if you have a forward-thinking leader in your organization who not only acknowledges what's happening in the bigger picture, but brings up suggestions and ideas for ways to move with the flow instead of standing still, but on the other side of that staff person, you have volunteer leaders that are, well, let's just say they're freaked out about change. And because they're freaked out about change, they resist listening to staff to the point where they exercise their leadership privilege and eliminate staff. So this happens over and over. We have great executives who should be allowed to be change agents, but they're paired with volunteer leaders who are afraid of change to the point where they run off a great staff person and stymie themselves in the past. How do we get past that in a world where we are leading by committee because it's a large membership organization? No man is an island. You've got really two situations going on, but I don't know how we move past that without giving some autonomy to staff or giving better training to volunteer leaders.
Yeah, I might know a little bit more about that subject matter than I should or did 4 or 5 months ago. Definitely. I mean, when you're an executive, you serve at the direction and the hiring and firing of volunteers. And sometimes those folks make decisions based on whims, whether that's, you know, they don't like the idea of change and someone that's pushing them outside of their comfort zone, or they've spent time with someone that has done that. They think now they're comfortable in doing it and capable of doing it without that person because of the processes and those types of things. And, you know, that is the hard part about being an executive, you know, where you're there, you're paid, it's your life. You do this as a, you know, your reality day in and day out. And then you have have volunteers that come in and out, and, you know, 1 year they love you, and the next year they think you're a bum and they want to get rid of you, or they think that, oh, well, we've already got everything we need, and so why are we paying this person this much, and let's move on, and we don't need them, we can do it on our own, and they're getting too much credit as the executive, and I want the credit as the leader. I honestly, I wish I could tell you how to fix that. I think ultimately it's a matter of how much attention the general membership pays to those who are their leaders and the types of decisions that they're making, because there are indicators there that show either the leadership's ready and able to lead the way they should to represent, or they're there just for their own interests. Again, circling back around where we've started.
All right. So, Clint, you've been around real estate for a while. You do a lot of strategic planning with associations, and I'm pretty sure all those rooms are full of real estate brokers. Knowing that in 2018, we're guaranteed to see some kind of shakeup in some form, whether it's in association life or legislative life or just some cool venture capital backed company showing up. Give us the crystal ball version of what you think is going to happen in the within 3 to 5 year range in our real estate life. And by the way, I won't hold you to this being true or not, but if it's true and you make big money, then you got to give me a piece of the action. And if it's wrong, I'm totally not going to judge.
Yeah, you can have all my action. There's not a lot to go around, so you're more than welcome to it. You know, I kind of look through the lens of the association, and I think this then, you know, trickles down into the agents world, and kind of the five trends that I'm looking at for this year in the association world is, I think that there's going to continue to be real leadership shifts. I mean, obviously, you know, Elizabeth Mendenhall better than I do, but I think that shift at the NAR level and that coupled with Bob Goldberg and his kind of change in philosophy there, I think that finds its way down into the local organizations. And so I hope that recharges and energizes those folks that we were talking about earlier, those change agents, those who do want to come in and do something different and with a different perspective. So I think there's going to be some shift in our leadership at all levels. And again, hopefully that helps to, you know, have the association better serve some of its, you know, less experienced members. I think consolidations continue in the association world, but more importantly for the day-to-day activities of the agents out there, I think the consolidation shift in MLS is just, that handwriting is on the wall. It's a matter of what that looks like. You know, I think as it moves more towards regionalization, what does that look like? Is it regionalization in a state, or does it even become regional in terms of parts of the country? And that one obviously has the biggest day-to-day impact on real estate agents that the associations and MLSs to some degree dictate. And then you mentioned the advocacy piece. I think, you know, for the realtor world, advocacy has to start to really adapt. It's been a part of the core standards now for 3 and 4 years. So a lot of associations have been drug along, kicking and screaming into this whole advocacy realm. There was obviously the big tax debate that recently happened, but I think there's going to have to be a shift in terms of how advocacy is approached, how it's delivered. You know, politics is such a crazy thing right now that if you're not adapting, you're really going to struggle. And then finally, you know, the thing that I almost kind of see, Lee, is that as markets settle in, I don't think they're going to even stagnate necessarily, but I think we've seen such an influx of newer agents around the country that we're going to see agents having a little bit more extra time on their hands or having to spend more time working on developing those future opportunities than what we've seen, you know, the last couple of years where the markets are just blowing and going at such a high rate. And even the newest members of the realtor community are active and have a lot of business. And so what that means for the associations is I see a lot more of the volunteer returning back to the association and giving more time in the association as a part of their strategy to build, you know, future opportunities.
Which means that your viewpoint can totally come true if we do pull some of the ego out of our volunteer leadership so that they can recognize that even our most newly minted realtors may have the knowledge and expertise to change the real estate profession forever, which I've seen that bias in my travels, that the old guard realtors think that the newly minted realtors need to grow some fur on their backs before they're allowed to have an opinion. But if they're coming from a consulting background or an HR background or technology, they may have exactly the skill set we need so that we can continue to move and grow. And I do think we'll have an increase in the bias that allows that because, as you mentioned, Elizabeth Mendenhall as our president this year, if you're not aware, in all of our hundred and some years as an association. She's our seventh female president, and she's young, and she owns a brokerage, so she's not far removed from the day-to-day life. And then Bob Goldberg, of course, is the new CEO of our organization, and Bob's a Tar Heel, so we know he's smarter than average people, but Bob's got a mind for thinking differently, and he actually has done a fantastic job already of engaging new voices in the process. So I think it's exciting times that we're in. But with that being said, I have to ask you the question that gets me in trouble all the time. So I'm going to drag you into my world of trouble. When do you think, because I don't think it's an if, I think it's a when, do you think, Clint, we're going to see a national multiple listing service that's backed by realtors, not just some Zillow site creating eyeball clicks, but an actual national MLS?
I honestly don't see a national scale MLS happening. I really am more oriented towards these super regionals happening over time, you know, getting us down to more in that range of 20 MLSs around the country that seem to hopefully, in my mind anyway, evolve around true markets that make sense. You know, there needs to be some continuity. There's some real importance to, you know, data being localized and generated locally and accountability locally. And so, you know, I don't honestly see that national, you know, the RPR flipping the switch or Zillow or whoever it is. I don't see that because of the importance of the localization in terms of the MLS. But you may disagree.
I do, because I think it's going to happen. But that's OK. I always get in trouble for asking that question because it makes people feel very nervous about their territory being impinged upon. But, you know, it's all like fun and exciting to talk about what could happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not about what I want.
That protectionist attitude has to go away. Absolutely. And they're dictating it.
They are. And I think this boils down to why all of the influx drama even happens is there's an innate fear of change, but consumers have demanded change. They've received it in almost every aspect except as realtors and association life. But it is moving. And I'm glad that's finally seeing some life, and hopefully we can all have a voice in making it even better going forward. So any last parting words you want to give to the listeners who have stuck it out on an association episode? Because I know those are my hardcore junkies for this life, and I love them for it.
Yeah, well, I'll just do a little self-promotion. I'm writing in Inman now, so you can read some of my columns in Inman. I also do a podcast like yourself. It's called The Association, and I talk a little bit more about specifically the association world, and that's available in all the major podcast outlets, and I do some speaking around the country. So if anyone ever wants to kind of get that different, former AE, recovering AE perspective, I'm happy to share.
Well, and y'all should know that if you need somebody that will help you think through the process of planning for the future, Clint's the guy you want to call, because it's not going to be that strategic planning that comes from the old guard, we'll just say too male, too pale, that old world thinking. This is fresher, younger, creative thinking. And I appreciate all that you do to help push realtors and association life forward, Clint. If you need to reach out to Clint, never fear, all of his contact information will be in the show notes for this episode, so you can access it at your leisure. And as always, if you are a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a normal person who's got your own take on real estate, hit me up at Lee Brown on Twitter or any of the social networks to be featured in a future episode of the podcast. And make sure you subscribe for more so we can see you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit CrazyShitInRealEstate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.